Rock and roll, I have Whitney Elkins Hutton on the Capital Razor Show, now brought to you by PitchDecks.com. How are you doing, Whitney?
I'm doing fantastic. Ruben, thanks for having me on.
This is going to be fun. All right, so why don't we start with this? Because I have some questions, but I don't want to throw any spoilers or teasers out there. But what is your background as far as real estate investing and passive investing and capital raising and multifamily syndication and that type of stuff? How did you get in the space?
So first of all, I'm a Leo. No, just kidding. I knew you would like that. So I'm currently, I'll start right now. I am the director of investor education at passiveinvesting.com. We are a private equity firm that focused on acquiring assets that generate passive income, long-term wealth build, multifamily, self-storage, car washes, hotels in the southeastern part of the United States. That is not where I started. I don't have a degree in real estate or finances or anything like that. I started off as a real estate investor in 2002, totally by accident. I bought a property with a significant other. And about a month after we closed on the property, or I closed on the property, the relationship fell apart. And I had a property. I was panicked. I was like, this thing's going to ruin me. I have to foot on all the bills. How on earth am I going to like sustain this? So, and it needed a heavy rehab. I learned a lot of electrical, plumbing, drywall, and refinishing floors, things I didn't intend on learning, but got the property up and going, rehabbed it in about 11 months, stuffed it full of roommates during that time to pay the bills. And then I sold the property and I made more money in that 11 months than I did in my day job with that working public health for the CDC and traveling about 80 hours a week. And I was like, how many more of these can I do?
Right.
So I was bitten by the bug. What I didn't realize is that all I was doing for myself was creating another job. I was doing really good at building up buckets of equity, but I didn't have the financial knowledge to be able to unlock those golden handcuffs for myself and create financial independence. It finally dawned on myself and my husband, after we did several projects together, we needed to find a way to hold on to the properties and put tenants in there. If you guys know me, like as soon as I get an idea in my head, I'm gone. I'm like 15 steps ahead of you down the rabbit hole. In a year and a half, I had over 30 properties, was quickly scaling well past that. And that's when I decided, hey, I want to step away and start enjoying a little bit more of life, spend time with my daughter and family. And my husband was like, I want that too. And I'm like, we're not doing 80 single family homes. We need to up the ante and go into multifamily real estate. And so we pursued both active and passive investments at the same time and enjoy both and still have both. The active investments, we get to control the real estate ourselves. We get to say when we sell, when we refinance. But the passive real estate has allowed us to scale our portfolio so much faster than we ever thought possible. Currently today, we have in our personal portfolio, we have over 6,300 units, multifamily units, residential units, and 1,400 self-storage units. And we've got some other investments on the side, like ATMs and car washes and stuff like that. So Airbnbs, we've got a lot going on.
Yes, it sounds like it. On the active side of investing, are you more of a joint venture kind of style multifamily investor or more of a syndicator?
I have been partnered on the joint venture side of multifamily real estate. So I'm more of an entrepreneur. I like finding organizations to where I can contribute value, especially in their early startup part of their phase. That's kind of a specialty of mine. I guess a superhuman skill. And anyways, bringing that operational knowledge, the sales op skills in particularly, and adding value that way, and then negotiating part of the GP from there. It's currently not the position I am in with passiveinvesting.com, just for complete transparency, but it's all about adding value. How can you add value to a team? Real true value.
So we love the guys at Passive Investing. I've had Dan on the show. I've had Danny on the show. And I consider Dan Hanford probably to be one of the greatest marketers, capital raising persons that I've ever met. So I highly admire him. And I know that you have a background coming from before you got to passive investing. And this is going to be fun talking about because some of my mentors are Annie Dickerson and Julie Lamb of the Good Egg Investments. You used to be investor relations at their company. And they were, like you mentioned, maybe I should let you tell the story because they were in hyper growth mode when you were there. And sometimes we as individuals don't want to grind and like work our brains off till nine. Yeah, I guess I'm guilty of that at some points, but I don't want to operate my life that way. Tell us about your experience working with Annie and your transition to getting to passiveinvesting.com?
Yeah, definitely. And it wasn't actually a transition, but like to kind of back the story up, Annie and Julie met at Best Ever Conference 5 years ago now. Time blurs together, especially when you lost 2 years to COVID, right? And then I met Annie the next year at the same conference. And so even in that 12 months, you know, they were like in hyperscale mode for them, or they were really starting to scale the business really quickly. And they were like, we need to start adding a team, moving out of, if you know the cash flow quadrant, moving from self-employment into a more business structure, putting a team underneath them, right? That's, as a business owner, that's where you're going to get true financial independence and time independence. So I was the first employee at Good Egg Investments, and I was responsible for pretty much anything they threw at me. And then, you know, I came from a sales ops background. They were like, ooh, we're going to give you the investor relations piece. That was such a unique experience to be just in such close contact with two amazingly powerful women, driven women that really understood their customer. They understood their investor. They had a passion and mission, you know, behind how they raised capital. And they were very clear on that. And it was so amazing, you know, especially, I mean, both of them are amazing. I have nothing but positive things to say about both of them, but like Annie Dickerson, marketing genius. Mm-hmm. So I learned so much from her. And that was such an honor to be in business with those two women and to continue to watch them grow. But at some point in time, for me, over the next couple of years, we're scaling. We're trying to put in systems as quickly as possible, but things are just really rapidly taking off. And I had to ask myself, am I the linchpin in this? Like, am I standing in the way of what could be amazing growth for these two women? And what am I willing to do what it's going to take to, you know, for them to actually have this growth? For me, can I give my nights? Can I give my weekends? Can I cancel trips? And how long can I do that? You and I were talking before the show, like, how long can I do this? How long can I sustain this? Mm-hmm. Well, if you had asked me in 2019, I would have said, give it to me. 2020 happened. And so I had the glorious experience to be at home with my child during COVID, and she was homeschooling. And I'm not the type of person who is going to be the teacher. I was so thankful that she was like online, but we were able to travel more. I was able to spend more time with my family, and I felt torn, right? Like here I am, like I had exactly what I'm trying to strive for in my life, the end result. And it's not 15 years from now, it's here now. I was like, I really have to ask myself, am I willing to delay having what I have in front of me right now to build this dream over here? Or is there somebody better suited to help them build this dream? And so it was a very tough conversation, an amazingly open conversation. And, you know, they were so supportive of me in that. Anyways, I stepped away. I was at home, my child, and I have my own like little consulting practice on the side. I have my own real estate. So it's not like I was bored. I had my writing with bigger pockets. And then about 2 weeks after I left, we had partnered with Passive Investing on several deals, and Passive Investing had learned that I left Good Egg. And they were like, well, if you could do anything, what would you want to do? And I'm like, I could just talk to the investor and educate them about the power of passive investing and all the different ways they can passive invest and be able to be there for my family as number one priority, you know, especially right now in this season of life. I would be such a happy camper, because at some point in time, I feel that I will get back into the pressure, the rage, and all of that fun stuff. I'm such a geek about that. Like, I love it. But at the same time, I have this internal tension. I was like, I have what I wanted in 15 years here right now. And I joke around. I'm like, my daughter likes me right now.
That's so amazing. One of the themes that I wanted to touch on in this particular, and the whole reason I brought this particular conversation up, is because I have this mindset fear around success, or I have in the past. And, you know, I've talked to coaches like Coach Kate and Patel about this. Mm-hmm. And I told them that, like, I didn't want to be trapped into a box where I had to outwork and out hustle. And I'm really stoked that you brought up the ESBI quadrant, because I think the concept that I'm trying to express here is that it's better to work smart versus work hard. And in certain situations, you want to try and find the path of least resistance where you can be successful by aligning yourself with the right people, like I did with Andy McMullen, my new partner, Andy at Legacy Acquisitions, versus my old situation, which was, I didn't tell you before, I was in a very high stress capital raising situation where they're like, they brought me on board to raise capital. And they were like, where's the capital? Where's the capital? And I'm just like, ah, like I can't raise from people that I didn't talk to yesterday and a long time ago. And it was very tough. And at the end of the day, I was like pulling my hair out. So I was like, I have to get out of here and implement some of these marketing tools and automations and branding and marketing, the stuff that I was learning from Annie Dickerson, and apply it to my own fund. And then I found somebody that had funds, which is Andy. And he's just like, hey, man, why don't you, instead of starting your own fund, come and work with me? It would make a lot more sense for you, because if you can bring your skill set and then I can bring the track record, we can help create more generational wealth for more families by doing this. And I was like, yeah, sign me up for that. That sounds great. So I did want to bring this up. Check this out, Capital Raiser Show audience, the nation, the Capital Raiser Nation. Check out this question that Whitney asked me before the show. She's like, hey, is your show Annie Dickerson's show? And I was like, no. I think some people get that misconception, because we did an amazing series where she came on 17 times, and it was called the Raising Money Minute, where we dissected and broke down individual little topics around capital raising. So I wanted to drive some traffic back to that particular program. And half of it was mindset, and half of it was like marketing and keeping investors warm between deals and branding and creating a website and stuff that you can never really have a 20-minute conversation with on somebody's podcast. So if you guys are interested, I'd highly recommend going back through the logs, the search logs, and finding that particular program. Is absolutely amazing. And they are my mentors, but I do not, there's another misconception, is I do not work for them, even though Annie Dickerson and I are good friends, and I do run some of their events, like their real estate mastermind and their expert session, and even their coaching session with Trevor McGregor for their Good Egg Investments crew that you can find at therealestateaccelerator.com. But I don't work for them. So I wanted to make sure that everybody understood that. Now, in this time, we got about 10 more minutes before we jump into the lightning round. I'm curious, because you've worked with two amazing organizations that have found themselves in different areas of scaling. What can you tell me that you've learned about capital raising? What would you like to discuss in that arena?
The common thread here is, you know, building that marketing funnel from a place of authenticity and just purely being helpful. You know, Dan, you know, Hanford at passiveinvesting.com, many people don't really understand his backstory with building, you know, the marketing around his medical offices or his surgical centers. And so that's him, that's his genius. And he's carried that through into different parts of the multifamily, building out the multifamily brand, the car wash brand, the entire brand across the board. But, you know, you can really see it play out with the Braxton brand and the Hurricane Wash and the Sparkle car washes. It's been so amazing just to, you know, be mentored in close proximity with two powerhouses in that space. Because if you had asked me 15 years ago, hey, come on board and do some marketing with us, I would have tucked my tail and ran. But really, what it means to do marketing is just to build a relationship with your end customer where they know, like, and trust you. And you're having a conversation. And whenever that like light bulb switch turned on for me, it was like, well, I can talk to somebody. Like, that's not a big deal. Like, we're just having a conversation. Fantastic. And I get to be myself and just share my experience. I can do that until the cows come home. There's no additional strategy past that. As far as maybe we can talk, dive into building out some sort of like marketing funnel that's really authentic for you as the syndicator, I would, maybe that would be a good place to start.
Yeah, we could go down that road. I did want to bring up this particular concept that Dan brings up, which is the investor triad. So he likes to ask this question to a room full of aspiring capital raisers. He's like, what do you think is most important? If you take a triangle and know is on the top and like is on the left corner and trust is on the other corner, which one do you think is most important for you to invest or for you to concentrate on as you're scaling your capital raising business? And then you get some people, they're like, oh, it's got to be trust, right? Because you'd never invest with anybody that'll trust you. And other people are like, oh, well, I got to like the person that I invest with. And he's like, well, the answer is no, because people can't ever like or trust you if they don't know you. So I wanted to give a shout out to Dan Hanford on that particular concept. It's something that If you can focus on getting in front of more people through marketing, through campaigns, through tapping other people's conferences and speaking at them and getting in front of as many people, I think my friend Hunter Thompson likes to say, hey, a lot of people are focused on changing their results of sales and investors that come into their deal from one investor out of 10 to two investors out of 10. And really they should be focused on how do I get in front of 1,000 people? So I think these kind of concepts are very fun to play with. Do you have anything to mention on this particular topic?
Yeah, I would 100% agree. I think at least for other syndicators that I've talked to, and there's been several people that have reached out to me about this. They're like, how did you start your YouTube channel? How did you start writing your blogs? There's a fear there. There's a couple of different fears there. I mean, there's really two in life, fear of failure, fear of success. But this particular fear is the fear of failure, like putting themselves out there. Honestly, like even if you get yourself in front of a room of 1,000 people, not everybody's going to like you, but they know you. They're going to know who you are. And that is like half the battle. And so how can you put yourself in a position to get over that fear, to just get in the room with people, whether it's physically or virtually, I think is hugely important.
So I'm curious about the types of conversations you're having with people. Is it like, hey, I want to do passive investing, but I don't understand it. Can you tell me more about it? Or are you actually helping them, getting them across the finish line so they actually are invested into the deals that passive investing offers, or is it something else or a combination of both of those? Tell me.
Yeah, I'm meeting the investor where they're at and how they come into our ecosystem. So my overarching goal is to find the particular investor and introduce them to us, our brand, different things that we're doing. Now, and in such simplistic terms to where if they don't know anything about syndicated real estate, that it's approachable. I'm not like, showing like flashy, like graphs about like inflation and cap rates and cap rate compression and trying to wow them with pretty graphs and terms and stuff like that. I'm really trying to like make it a very approachable investment because there are so many people out there that have no idea that this is even accessible to them. So how do I like actually connect with them in a room? A lot of people, seasoned investors or investors that haven't yet invested, they're just like, oh, wow, that was really a simplistic way of putting what is sometimes presented as a very complex topic. Because of that, I tend to establish myself as somewhat of an authority in the space. And so then they will come to me with their questions to see if I can kind of like help them like better process what it is that's their obstacle or hanging them up. Part of that goes to my experience with being in so many passive deals myself. So I can really like meet the investor where they're at and then try to help them that suss out what their obstacle is at that point in time, whether it's just understanding syndication in general or moving them from their active investments into passive investments, helping them understand how that strategy works, or just maybe they're even trying to scale their passive investments and figure out what's next and what's most appropriate for them.
Yeah, I think investing is a lot more emotional than logical. And there's all these people and syndicators in this entire sea and ecosystem of multifamily syndication that are just, they want to overwhelm you with infographics and market analysis. And let me tell you about the team and let me tell you about this. And they're not really like tapping into the emotional requirements of the investor. So I like that you have a more general and broad approach and think it's so brilliant that passive investing is getting people to come in that have not syndicated before. You mentioned that they're entering your ecosystem and then you talk to them and you're trying to find out where they're at. My typical question when I meet somebody like that, or even an active investor for that matter, hey, where are you at on your real estate journey? Tell me about how's it going for you? And then they just open up and start talking about things. But I want to ask you this specific thing. What are some of the avenues that you guys as a company and organization are doing to drive traffic and get some of these people onto a calendar or a phone call or Zoom call with you?
So for me, I can speak kind of like from my like little world, little corner, is I'm focused on a lot of the online virtual stuff. So I have a YouTube channel, spiderwebbing that content as much as I can into like a podcast, into blogs, making sure those blogs are posted in appropriate places around the web, repurposing content, bringing that really good pillar content, attracting investors. We have a whole marketing team that handles the ins and outs of that. So I'm just focused on creating the content. I also like doing boot camps for people. So, you know, some people are like, thanks for producing 50 YouTube shows or, you know, 50 online videos. Can you like distill that down into like a 3-hour session that I can put on 2x speed? So I'll do boot camps, and all of my sessions, I strive to make them interactive. That just helps people. They can hop online and can interact with me and can ask me anything. And then I also speak at, you know, public events. So I will, you know, get into meetups. I will get into conferences, both virtual and live conferences, and connect with the rooms and investors that way. And then there are investing groups. So there are specific groups around the country that are, you know, really trying to bring in high quality syndicators or operators to present in front of their members, seeking out those type of groups.
Cool. This has been fascinating hearing about your perspectives working with these two very large organizations and then stepping into the mindset of both a passive and active investor and investor relations specialist. So this has been great. But it's time to jump into the lightning round, one of my favorite parts of the show, if not the favorite. And I'll start with this question. What is the best vacation you have ever taken?
Well, it might be the one right before COVID. We went to Mexico and we rented a car and we needed a vacation that my husband and I had done 10 years prior, but this time we took our daughter. And so, you know, not her first out of the country trip, but, you know, just, you know, she got to like explore like a ton of history in the Yucatan Peninsula, climb ruins, eat at local restaurants. Some of those vacations that are near and dear to my heart are the ones that I get to see through my child's eyes now.
Wow, that's a great perspective. And I love the Mexican Riviera and Yucatan Peninsula. It's just an amazing part of the world. What's your favorite childhood memory?
I feel like I'm raising, my husband and I are raising our daughter much like I was raised, doing a lot of camping and family events. But one, there's an experience, I did not appreciate it whenever I was 11, 12 years old, but my parents took me out of school. My dad was working in Anchorage, and we spent, my mom, my grand, her parents and I spent 11 months pulling a fifth wheel trailer up through Canada into Alaska, staying with my dad, and then down the Highway 1 through British Columbia, Washington, Oregon, California, and then across the Mojave Desert. There's a lot. There's breakdowns, there's blown tires, there's a lot of stories like that. And, you know, there's me burning my fingers on the phone in Needles, California, trying to dial, you know, my dad's phone number for my mom. You know, she ran out of fingers because she burned them all. And she was like, touch the phone. I'm like, no. But there's a lot of positive memories that come to that. And just really the experience. I didn't appreciate it at the time, but just having that experience was amazing.
It's all part of the adventure. Breaking down and getting stuck in the sand or flat tires. It's all part of it. So I can appreciate those experiences too. All right. Short answer on this. Best way to raise capital from your perspective?
Really following that know, like, and trust triangle, because if you concentrate on, if you can move your ego out of the way and just put yourself out there and just, you know, follow that triad that Dan puts out there. And it's not just Dan, but a lot of very successful operators do. You can't not, and as long as you have an amazing product to back that up, you can't fail.
How long do you want to live?
That's a great question. My grandparents all lived into like 96, 97, 98. So I'm shooting for over 100 for sure.
Fantastic. Do your spiritual philosophies have anything to do with your success in business?
I would say yes and no. I'm a very spiritual person. I think the way they are tied in is that it keeps me very grounded and focused. There's very powerful forces at play here that we just don't understand. There has to be an interplay there. I don't pretend to fully understand it.
What do you love about high altitude races?
Just to, you know, it's, and people call me crazy, but I just love pushing myself and doing hard things. And it's not the race that I love. It's actually training for the race. Race day is just the reward. It's actually, you know, training for it and kind of grinding it out.
Yeah, I have a couple of medals. I think one of my favorite races was called the Bravest Race down in, actually in the Mexican Riviera. They had these dudes that dressed up, and women that dressed up as zombies. And it was kind of like you had these flags, like from flag football, and the zombies would try and steal those as you're like running through this obstacle course and like getting stuck in swamp mud and like climbing up ramps and like swinging and sliding down into cenotes and all this crazy stuff. But Spartan is really a lot of fun too. If they ever bring back what's called the Bravest Race, I would love to do that again. So definitely love races for sure. All right, so tell me, have you ever experienced a miracle or had a near-death experience?
So yes, I was in a car wreck in 2000, the year 2000. there's just no way that my friend was in the car. He was in the car driving, and there was no way he was in the car whenever the car got wrapped around the tree, and we have no idea how he got out of the car. Yeah, definitely forces at play there. But yeah, that was definitely a near-death experience for all of us involved, all three of us involved in that car wreck.
Crazy. All right, last question. This is asked by Shanna Amigo, one of our great listeners on the show. She's curious, what kind of impact would you like to leave in the world?
Just knowing that I helped as many people on their path to financial independence. And then for me, I find it to be a public health issue. And public health isn't just about, do you have COVID? Do you not have COVID? I think like that's what we all think of public health right now. Public health means, can you actually have like your basic needs met? And I think there's a really huge lack of financial education right now in all aspects, and being able to like build wealth, keep wealth, and pass wealth on to the next generation. And that is something I'm very passionate about educating people about.
Very cool. Great answers on the lightning round. I love that part of the show. Shout out to the Capital Raiser Nation. Thanks for tuning in. Please leave us a 5-star written review. Shout out to my company, Legacy Acquisitions, and our sponsors, Good Egg Investments, Syndication Pro, Kaitin Patel, Jerome Myers, and our newest sponsor, Richard C. Wilson of the Family Offices and his company, PitchDecks.com. They're doing and handling all of the videos for the podcast now and helping me with some other pitch decks and marketing and things of that nature. Check them out at thecapitalraisershow.com. All right. So my question to you is, how does the audience get a hold of you, Whitney?
Yeah, definitely. You can reach out to me at passiveinvestingwithwhitney.com. There's a quick like little form there. It just helps me capture some information about you before we hop on a call, and you get access to my schedule on the very next screen.
How do people access your YouTube channel?
Go to passiveinvesting.com, spelled out. So the dot is D-O-T.
Okay, I thought that was separate from your company. Very cool. Awesome. All right. Well, one last question before I let you go. I know you got to pick up your daughter. What would be some words of wisdom for the aspiring capital raiser as they journey along in their business?
It depends on where they are, but you know, always going back to think about what your ideal customer needs from you and delivering that. And I know it seems very kind of generic information, but I think people get so hung up. And operators, I see it all the time. They can get hung up in the numbers and the financials just as much as the investor can. But the investor, they have a journey that they're going through themselves. As operators, we don't have a deal unless we have the investor.
Very cool. Well, this has been a blast. I really appreciate you coming on, accepting my invitation to come and hang out with the Capital Raiser Nation.
Yeah, thank you. This has been amazing.